You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
I ask them for scenarios where they've exhibited their skills. When they talk about, I have done this or we have done this, I ask them, what did you do in this? And what did you face in this where you have exhibited a thought, a critical thought which could change?
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. And I'm so excited today to be chatting with Aparna Balasundar. Aparna is the DOI Ambassador and India Chapter Lead for DevOps Institute. She's a DevOps Practice Lead for the Application Managed Services service line for the APAC region at Capgemini, and has a deep experience in applying and setting up DevOps Centers of Excellence, leading technical and cultural shifts, and strengthening DevOps capability. Aparna spearheads go-to-market strategies in her current and previous organizations that empower the sales, marketing, and solutions teams to create and track DevOps roadmaps, develop marketing and communication content, conduct market research and analysis, and develop business plans and presentations. She's very keen on promoting and developing the core human element to drive a DevOps mindset, and I know we're going to be touching on that point. Aparna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. And I'm really excited to talk to you, Jason, and be a part of this podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And, you know, I love bios like yours because I feel like I have a really good understanding of you know, what it is that you do. And I feel like we should be doing that. Like when we get back in person, someone should just follow us around when we're going to be introduced and just like say your bio before you shake hands. Well, I guess we're not shaking hands, but before you do the fist bump or whatever we're doing now.
Absolutely. I think if the, as you just mentioned, if bios could talk, maybe that's going to be the future. Probably things could just talk by themselves.
There you go. Now someone needs to just get on developing that and then we're good. Well, thank you so much again. And we're going to get human today. So should we just dive right in?
Absolutely. Right.
So Aparna, I'm really interested to in getting to know your backstory a little bit and how you got to where you are in your career, you know, with the application managed services side for the APAC region of Capgemini. Obviously, that's a pretty big role right there as DevOps practice lead. So, you know, how did you kind of make your way along this path? Where did you get started?
Right. I would just go with the trend probably and say, put in hashtag and say, don't turn away. that's going to be the mantra, don't turn away with the hashtag. So the journey of somebody who is from a non-tech background, and if I have to plot the graph from where I started as a HR professional 18 years ago and moved all the way up to I don't know how many paths that has crossed, and then right now being where I am, which you read in my bio. It's been quite a bit of journey. 18 plus years in the software industry is it's a huge thing. When I look back, it's like a big number right now. Where the first 7 years, I was part of the HR, human resources. I was into resource management and recruitment. I did my engineering, but I thought probably I should take this route of human resources. I always feel and felt and still feel I'm good at people management. That's my strength and core area. So I straight got into that after my engineering. And my strength was ways of working with people. So I moved up. While I was doing that, I suddenly was asked for a job role shift. After 7+ years, I was asked to move into procurement management. Procurement of servers and routers and all the things which you might see in a data center. This was for a particular customer in the UK healthcare. And they said, just can you probably handle that? And that's how I got into infrastructure.
That's so interesting because I would not think HR to the IT side is something that's a path that many people follow.
Right. Right.
So how did you, why did they ask you to kind of make that, or did you ask for that change?
No. I actually came back from my my post-maternity leave and all that. And then they said, we have fulfilled your role in the HR with somebody and you have to take something else. So it was like, I didn't have a choice. I mean, you don't get choices. So you pick up what is there in front of you.
Is that why you say don't turn away? Is that where that mantra came from?
Absolutely. So you'll have to just pick your opportunities. Do not think twice to put your hands up. That's what I tell everybody, be it in my team, and especially to the girls and the women out there, put your hands up. Right in the front of the table, just put your hands up. If you get an opportunity, be the first.
Yeah, that's pretty good advice. As a woman in the tech field, I guess early on, did you have things that kind of got in the way, that some barriers to entry? Did you ever feel like you were on the outside?
Absolutely. I mean, change is difficult. Change is going to be not something that you might like, but you do it because there's no choice first thing. But probably when you look back, you feel that maybe that was right. And if it wasn't right, but it was a good lesson at least. So that's what I thought. Probably if it works, well and good. If it doesn't work, I know where I can go back to. So that's what my mindset was. And I still do that. Because if I'm going to tell you what I have done after that, it is like every 6 months or 1 year, there was a change in role. I hated, I like to move on and keep moving on. And stagnation was never a case in mine. So what happened was, from procurement, they said, why don't you take project management? You're doing procurement really well. So I said, okay, I will do infrastructure project management. And from there moved into the project management for the application development side, and another couple of years in that. And then I moved into a strategic role with my previous company, which was CSE, Computer Sciences Corporation, which is right now DXC. So there was a team which was formed back in 2013, which was a strategic team for the custom application development. And as part of that, DevOps was something that was getting introduced. And it was a perfect agile team with 5 members, each of them at each corners of the world. Like my boss was in Australia. I had my team members, one of them in a couple of them in India, one of them in UK, and another in US. So it was a perfect team, which was still coordinating across the time zones. And we were probably the pioneers to get started with introducing DevOps. So that gave me a lot of confidence to learn about it back in 2013, like setting things up, probably creating your collaterals and artifacts in terms of how do you even bring in the value? What are you going to go and tell your customers? How are you going to convince them that you are better than your customers? So it involved the sales and marketing side. It involves the pre-sales. It involved being a liaison between the solutioning delivery teams and the sales teams, so that you become the pivot and work among all of them and convince them, saying that this is the way forward. We were quite early is what I could say then, but then that was like my starting point with DevOps, to know, learn. And from there, I have moved on to a couple of more companies, and right now with Capgemini. But after that, it has been like setting up of the COE for DevOps. And the company before this, it was like setting it up and also managing a huge team of 30 people across like 10, 11 customers who wanted to do DevOps or who were already doing DevOps. So it's been, if you plot the graph, it has just gone high up, up and up, but it has been quite a bit of a journey.
I'm overwhelmed. So, I mean, seriously, you must not be someone who scares very easily.
Oh yeah, I do scare others probably.
Because I mean, I'm at a loss for words. I'm kind of like thinking, and I'm, you know, the jumping around that you did, and maybe not recently, but initially, in your career from various different paths, and areas of expertise. I mean, I would, for me, if I don't know enough about a subject, I get a little, I want to go and learn as much as I can because I don't want to sound silly when I'm talking to someone else about that topic, which has been an actually interesting thing for me here on this podcast, because I'd like to, you know, as I always say to our guests, I stepped into this and I don't know anything about DevOps. I know very little bit about IT. So this has been an educational journey for me. I would imagine, you know, making the leap, for example, from HR to IT, and then yes. for what you were doing, you know, with project management, to, you know, to the next step and to DevOps, and it's a completely different understanding. And I understand that, and maybe we could talk about this. I'm sure you took pieces from each role, and that's kind of how you shaped into becoming a DevOps professional.
Absolutely.
Did you go to school? Like, what did you study when you were in at university?
I did my engineering, instrumentation, and control, but that has nothing to do with what I am doing right now.
Of course not.
But if I have to answer this question, how did this leap happen? If I have to tell the truth, it scares. Because you'll have to still project as somebody who knows, because people around you know things. But what I had to do, and I still do, is I keep learning. I go shamelessly asking people, even be the silliest of doubts it may be, for them to even judge me. But then I gain from that at the end of the day. So I go about, I network, I communicate, and I think that's what DevOps talks, right? Communication and collaboration. Maybe if I had to look at my younger self and tell, I would just say that do that more. Probably the schools should teach these skills more than what they do, actually. That's what I would do, Jesse.
And, you know, the buzzwords that I have been learning, you know, with digital transformation, cultural transformation, I'm sure with a background like what you have with what you learned in HR, mm-hmm. probably comes into play quite a bit these days, I would think.
Right. You're talking about from the HR that I picked up. I think zoom out and see all the interconnections that you have. You'll have to do your prioritization skills. You'll have to pick up your empathy. I think the critical thinking and skill sets, those are like the very important responsibilities for professionals right now.
And something that I think you say is, you know, the human side of culture that gets yes. largely ignored. Can you tell us sure. a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So when we talk about DevOps, I'm sure even you must be hearing, it's all about the tools and technologies around it. The market is overcrowded. Or I think if there is one tool today, there's definitely going to be something else tomorrow. So there's never going to be an end to that. But who's going to be controlling all that is the humans. So, and where is the connections? I still see there is a huge gap, and I'm sure even the reports have mentioned it. The companies which are doing DevOps might fail tomorrow if they do not work and concentrate on the human element of it. So I think that is the huge missing block, even when we talk about it right now, saying that a lot of companies are DevOpsified companies, but are they humans who could spread that message? I think that's the message which DevOps Institute gives, and which we should probably take forward. And how many companies are realizing that is a big question mark even now.
I mean, it's right in the title of this podcast, The Humans of DevOps, and we do try to focus, you know, on the humans themselves. And I think it's right. It's applying the tech to a human is different. You're thinking differently than creating a perfect software. Maybe that doesn't really exist, but a software that can be easily onboarded or explained and utilized by humans, right? May not be the perfect software.
Correct. Absolutely. Because if there are humans, if there are team members who are motivated to probably be good in their foundation and basic, I think tools are just like the back of their hand. They are going to be learning it anyways. And if they have to survive, they will still learn it. But what are you going to be doing to hire these engineers? I think more than hiring the DevOps engineers who are just based on their skills of tools and technologies, I have done hiring for DevOps in the current and the previous companies. What I look for is their mindset. What I look for is their attitude, their learning capabilities. Can they give good customer service? Can they actively listen? And communication. When we say communication, it's just not about speaking and your reading, right? What about your writing? How many people are even concentrating on their email communication? Can they write well? Are they willing to share? Are they willing to talk the truth? Are they committed to the team? And what about their critical thinking and empathy? I think these are like a whole bunch of skills. I ask them for scenarios where they've exhibited their skills. I mean, it may not be a direct questions, but when they talk about, I have done this or we have done this in their resume or while they talk, I ask them, what did you do in this? And what did you face in this, which where you have exhibited a thought, a critical thought, which could change. And those are the people who probably will be the future. You just cannot buy them right now. These skills have to be ingrained right now.
Hey, humans of DevOps. It's Nixon here from DevOps Institute. I'm dropping by to share how you can scale up and advance your career with the DevOps Institute Premium Membership. Our goal is to empower you to gain the edge you need to advance your DevOps skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning. A premium membership gives you all access to what DevOps Institute has to offer. How does getting 30% off all certification exams sound? What about having access to a tool that can assess your team's DevOps capabilities? And if that wasn't enough, members can also read our entire library of skill books to support you during your DevOps journey. Get started today for the price of a cup of coffee by going to devopsinstitute.com/membership. Head to the link in the episode description to receive 20% off your DevOps Institute premium membership.
There's a lot of things that can go wrong there too, I feel like, with all those scenarios, all those factors that make us human, right?
True.
And I think
absolutely.
Humanity is not, by being a human, you are not perfect. So yeah, there are so many, I feel like, instances there where it's not the same for everybody.
Absolutely, it is not. And not everybody could have faced scenarios where they could have or need to display these skills. But what a good leader can do is teach them. So that's where the leaders have to be groomed in such a way that they know these skills. Obviously, when you hire freshers or people who have lesser experience, they look up to leaders who can motivate them, who can teach them, whom they can trust, respect, and they will be cared for. I think that's where I will be very glad to say that my HR skills, dealing with so much of recruitment and resource management, because that had to just deal with people. So it automatically came like a skill which was probably complementing to this right now, and that probably helped me move on in my career.
So I guess, you jumped around from area to area, mm-hmm. and it obviously molded, you know, your ability to do what it is that you do today. Did you have speaking of great leaders, did you have a great leader or mentor that kind of helped you along your path?
Absolutely. There were quite a few of them. If I can bring out some people, I think in my DXC, there was a person by the name Rajesh who knew that I didn't have the enough experience, but they still supported me. My mentor and my manager who was with DXC, his name is Kirti, and still there in Australia, but then he helped me a lot. He was a tough taskmaster, but then that helped me prove that I could pick up more challenges. I think that's where I got molded myself to know where do I need to draw a line, where do I need to where can I say no, where can I say yes, and what my capability is. And probably some of the mentors that I've had, I've been really lucky to have them.
And along that, you know, did you not get advice maybe that you wish you had that maybe you picked up along the way? Yeah, that's a tough question.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
I'm putting you on the spot. That's what we do a little bit.
Yeah, but I probably, as I said, get a little more to celebrating each other's achievements. I think that should be a thing that should have been taught to me more, exhibited more by more leaders, so that I could also have picked up. But I did miss that a little bit here and there. I realized it and I course corrected. So I think that's one thing that I can say here.
That's a good one. You know, I feel like with learning about DevOps and DevOps principles, I'm loving the concept of a blameless culture. I think that's such a great, you know, people like to be motivated. They don't want to be scolded. And, you know, no one wants to be told what they're doing wrong. I mean, you can even apply that principle. You know, I've talked about her a few times, but I have a 4-year-old. And even at that age, like with there's so much learning that they're doing. Everything they do is wrong, pretty much. You know, you're just this impulse being at that age, and typically what they do is wrong, and no one wants to be told over and over again how to do it right or that they're doing it wrong. They want to learn through observation and be told when they're doing it right. You're celebrating the small wins, right, and not constantly being told what's wrong. I feel like that. That should never end. That's kind of something we should all just practice all the time.
Absolutely. We should probably learn to celebrate each other's success and probably be more open to go ahead and tell people and give them a pat on the back, because I see that's something that is lagging. I have even had instances, if I can quote, where you send out a mail to your team member saying congratulations, and they don't respond back with a thank you, because there could be only two reasons when somebody doesn't know something. They don't want to do it. They don't know how to do it. So I think a lot of times when I have gone ahead and told them as a feedback, when somebody appreciates you, you are supposed to say thank you or probably acknowledge it. They said they didn't know it, that they'll have to respond back. They thought, okay, it's fine. I've got a mail. I've done it. Good.
It's a one-way street right there. And that's another really basic principle, I feel like. When someone says, hey, nice job, you say thank you.
I think that's what I would say. A lot of things people take it for granted, but rather you should teach them maybe in your high school to say thank you and please, and all these things are going to be helpful for you in the future. That's what
I think it should be earlier than that. You know, we try to, you know, I feel like kindness, you know, is something that's like a very basic principle that you should be taught early, because I think being kind always gets you further in life than maybe kicking, screaming, and yelling and not being kind.
Absolutely, because that's where the strong leadership comes from, because you know where to stand and how to act in the interest of others, and see and do. I think your people see it probably, and maybe they pick up these qualities. I have seen that. I have done that, and I think there are people who have looked at me and done that also. So I strongly believe train people in such a way that they can leave you, but treat them in such a way that they don't want to leave you. This is such a favorite quote of mine from Richard Branson, but I really love that. Train people so that they can leave, but treat them so well that they don't want to leave you.
Yeah, that's a great quote. That's a really good quote. And you'll probably get better productivity out of them, right? And absolutely, they'll be happy, you'll be happy. That's like the perfect scenario.
true.
That's some good advice for managers. Do you have advice for incoming, you know, DevOps engineers or people who are just kind of starting out maybe earlier in their career that can help them along their journey?
Sure. I think the missing link which people, the engineers should know, is the human contact, and they should start doing that. Get to know the people better. There's no harm talking to people, because we still see islands of people, islands of developers, islands of testers, and QA and security, even within the same team, because I really wonder what stops them from talking. So consciously the leader should go ahead and make your team members meet. And I think the engineers who are joining should take this as an advice that get to know your people, get to know each other in your team, have a good communication channel between each other, and foster knowledge sharing and a blame-free culture. I think that would be the advice, because when I right now I have doubled up also as a Scrum Master for a particular customer. So I follow the three ways of DevOps: flow, feedback, and continuous learning. So when I tell them about the flow, it's just not about finishing a task. It is finishing a task and making sure that you do not have so many things on starting new and limiting your work in progress. Because people think that if I have more work in progress, I'm making a lot of progress, but it is not. And automating the manual tasks and backlog grooming, because in the rush to do the work, they do not understand why they should do a grooming of your backlog, grooming and talking to your product owners. Why is it important? How is it important? So I do that coaching right now to make them understand that all this makes you as a better individual rather than just stick you as, if I have to tag you as a good developer or a better individual, pick up what you want, is the question that I have when I talk about flow. And when I talk about the feedback, I advise them to write more tests, do more code reviews, do more peer reviews, and involve your business analyst, involve your product owner, involve the business right from the start, rather than you call yourself agile and DevOps, but you do not go back to them and tell them, I think that's a problem again. And continuous learning, I think, please eradicate technical debt and learn to collaborate, because many of them, let me tell you, Jason, the problem is many of them have not been exposed to a production infrastructure. So what happens is they do not know in case if they are even doing a mistake. You can't expect everyone to know the hidden rules without even being exposed to it. So I think that's where the learning comes from. I have my architects continuously teach them, give them the tricks of the trade that will help them, the engineers to move and take the next positions as they go on. So I think I have made it as a mandatory thing, very critical, the onboarding documents, your knowledge transfer and the continuous learning, that's going to really help.
All great advice. And, what's something now, I want to get back to your thoughts perhaps on maybe the opportunities that lie ahead for in the DevOps space. There's been so much change within the past year due to the pandemic. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges that have come out of that, and perhaps being more positive, what are the opportunities?
Right. I think the biggest challenge which pre-COVID that a lot of people faced was a resistance to work from home, resistance to give them the secure access to be wherever you are and still be working. I think that has moved on, and it is right now there's a lot of work and trial and error methods, but the demands for working from anywhere, that has given rise to a lot of people in terms of exhibiting the secure ways of working, exhibiting new ways of working. I think what COVID has done is move the entire IT, move the entire technology maybe by 10 years. That's what the reports from Gartner and everybody says, and it has probably happened for good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is absolutely amazing.
I don't think there was a lot of openness towards working from wherever you are. And I think that's become the norm today, and it's only getting better. We don't see it any resistance to it. You are working wherever you are from, and it has reduced a lot of your travel time, and it has become more productive. Yes, on the other hand, meeting and collaborating, there is nothing second to it. I don't have any second thoughts on that. But yes, if this is the best that you could do, If you're given lemons, make a lemonade and have it, I think.
So does that mean we're probably going to be headed back to perhaps a hybrid system, and maybe right. not you know, full time in the office, but perhaps maybe not full time at home either?
Absolutely. I think if you ask me personally, and I'm sure you will also agree to it, it is going to be hybrid. It has happened for the good. And I think that's the only positive way of looking at it, because there's no other choice that we have, because your offices, my offices, are all like ghost offices right now, with just chairs sitting down there. So what you could just look at for the future will be in hybrid ways of working. Be wherever you are and give me the output. I think that's the way the leader should also have their mindset, because we are talking about mindset and culture. We are not talking about engineers only here. We are talking about the leaders, the senior leaders, and the C-suite people, who have to first think that the results matter and trust your people. So I think in the future, a lot of sentiment analysis is going to be a way of work. A lot of opinion metrics are going to come up. I think, forget the voice of customer, it's also going to be the voice of team and voice of society, the voice of your company. It is going to be your companies are going to listen to you. They are going to probably, I think the term here is internet of behavior. So that we provide the right feedback and we alter the behavior of people.
It's trust, right? At the end of the day, I feel like the companies, businesses had to trust their people, employees. True. You know, it's, I don't know, maybe this is a weird analogy. I don't know. Go with me here. I'm in a weird space today. I feel like, you know, back in school, I remember you used to have to raise your hand and ask permission to use the restroom, which is such an antiquated thing to do if you think about it. Like, we don't trust people to just say, to just be able to go and do something so simple and that everyone has to do. And I feel like that's kind of like the trust factor with employees with an employer and their employee to be able to work from home these days, because it feels like that's something that everyone can do. And yeah, there was this weird approach to it, I feel like, from the employer, that if you're working from home, you're not working. And clearly over the past year and a half, we've learned that's not true, because productivity went up when people are working from home. And it's just amazing what happens when you actually trust people.
Correct. I think that was one of the missing links, because we tell our own employees, build the trust with your customer, but have we built it within our own teams? Have we built it within the organization? I think that is going to be a big question mark, and every company has to accept it, that a lot of them have failed doing that, and they'll have to build it.
Yeah, I hope the trust remains. I mean, I think some employers are seeing it as, well, now let's sell the building. let's keep everybody home. But yeah, and that doesn't hurt when you can save money too. But yeah, I hope that trust factor remains. I think it will.
Yeah.
But I'm an optimist.
Yes.
So moving on, and you know, with COVID and just on that topic, you know, what are some things that you've been doing for yourself to kind of keep your mind right and in a good, positive frame of mind throughout all this?
Oh, yes. I have picked up gardening skills. I have a lovely, nice balcony right now, which has flowers. Me and my daughter, we took gardening classes for 5 weeks, every day, 1 hour in the evening. We just zoomed in this call and we were learning that. Yoga was another thing. And I'm a trained singer. Way back, but now I have again restarted it so that I remain sane. If you ask me, I don't want to hide it, but yes, I was also one of those who felt really depressed. I mean, we are humans, and the human way is to mix, collaborate, and talk and look at people, and it's a very natural way. We are used to it, and suddenly we do not get to do that. It was it seemed very overwhelming. It seemed not the right thing to do. But then to remain sane, to probably get my daughter also to feel that it is okay and everything is still going to be fine, we are going to have a hopeful future. I had to divert, do other things. And I think it just feels nice right now when you look outside your balcony and terrace and there are nice plants which are sitting there and flowering. It's good.
Yeah, gardening is very zen. I think I'll need your help with that because I'm terrible keeping like my plants alive. It's something I wish I could do. I finally have good grass this year because we've just, been home, so I can actually water it. Other than that, though, I think I need some assistance. I turn to music. I always tell people music has always kind of been my little savior. I feel like it can put you... Honestly, it could do either. It could put you in a really depressed mood or positive, depending on the way you like to go with it. But I like to, I always kind of go that way. Right. Singing. Singing is cool.
Gardening, one thing which you, key skill that you pick up is patience.
Yes.
You don't sow it and you don't get to see the results the next day. You just have to do your work and you will see the results probably in 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, 6 months' time. But you got to do it every single day. You have to you have to water them. You have to probably talk to them.
Maybe that's what I'm not doing enough of. I need to start talking. I have neighbors though. If they like start thinking that I'm going, I'm going crazy. I don't want them to call anybody. Maybe I'll start doing that though. Anyway. Well, this is great. Oh, you know what? I like to ask this question and totally put my guests on the spot, but what's one unique thing about you that nobody knows? I think you kind of shared a couple there, but is there anything else?
I love Zumba. I think not a lot of people know that, but I just can get into the moves. That's my biggest stress buster, stress reliever. And I do that for 5-10 minutes and I'm like all up and high.
That's great. Well, Aparna, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jason. I think it was wonderful to talk about everything else other than tools and technology for a change. And it was a very light and a nice conversation. Thank you so much.
It was great getting to know you. I appreciate it. And I always say, I feel like I have another friend after these podcasts.
Absolutely. We are going to connect more on our gardening tips now.
Definitely. Yes. I'm going to call you on that. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this podcast the same as I always do by encouraging you to become a premium member of the DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.